Ready to proceed?
May it please the court, Nicole Walker on behalf of the appellant Cheyenne Dabney. May it please the court?
Oh, you're on. It's okay. Just that we're hearing you twice.
Okay.
At least for me, it's disconcerting.
Okay.
Not that I don't enjoy hearing you twice, but not the same thing over and over.
Imagine. Well, then I get to hear
some,
all you
some
twice.
People we need to hear twice, but not you.
Okay. The state obtained unnecessary delays in this case and lengthy delays, which prevented Mr. Dabney from going to trial until over 1 year after his arrest. Because of these unnecessary and lengthy delays, the state significantly impaired his defense. Thus, his right to a speedy trial was violated.
As I read, go ahead.
What was the impairment of the defense?
The impairment of the defense was threefold. One was that on the day of trial, the July 13th day of trial, which was when the last continuance was obtained by the state, the prosecutor represented to the court that they would not be able to proceed on the rape charge without the DNA, which was what was sought to be excluded on that day. They were then able to proceed with the DNA. In addition, on the day that they obtained their continuance, the victim was downstairs, apparently.
I'm not sure what the significance of what you just told me is.
I mean,
you haven't linked that to prejudice.
Well, he was on the day that they were supposed to go to trial on July 13th, there are several offenses, including sexual solicitation, et cetera, and a rape offense. The state said they would not be able to go to trial that day on the rape offense if the DNA was not admitted. And what happened was there was a discovery violation where there was a court order out there saying that the evidence should have been excluded, and it was not, and there was a continuance given.
I think that the difficulty here is trying to distinguish between impairment to the defense and that the defense was somehow limited in an opportunity to fairly present its case or to confront the evidence that was presented by the state, as opposed to the general prejudice of being incarcerated pending trial or the angst of waiting for trial as a result of the delay.
Mm-hmm.
So let me see if I can get a better definition of how the defense was impaired rather than simply that the original trial date was delayed for the reasons that you've explained.
Well, one of the things that impaired the defense was that on the first day of trial in November, the victim's biological mother came forward and for the first time told the prosecutor that our client had admitted to penetrating the victim's vagina. That particular witness had never been spoken to prior to that date. And this was the first time that defense counsel heard of this and was given a short delay in order to confront her. But that plus the DNA then significantly impaired his defense because he wasn't able beforehand to talk to her and to go to the prison to determine, because she said she met with him twice at the prison. Counsel did make some efforts the day in trial to determine the records, et cetera, but he did not have that entire year ahead of time to address that issue.
Well, as I read Judge Carpenter's opinion, he was very much aware of two things, the delay that had occurred, that the delay was a result of confusion over the DNA, and how the DNA was analyzed and how that relates to the statute. He was not focused, apparently, in the opinion by any argument that the defense was handicapped in some way, other than simply that it didn't go to trial as originally scheduled and discovery didn't take place in accordance with an existing order. But where was he wrong in the way in which he analyzed it?
Well, for several reasons. The reason the issue became unfocused was because everybody lost sight of the fact that there was a discovery violation in this case. If we can go back, on June 13th, in May, the state obtained a continuance to from June 13th to July 13th, saying they had incomplete DNA and the prosecutor would not be available at trial. The court then, acknowledging that there was a potential speedy trial issue, said, look, you have a firm July 13th date to go to trial. Otherwise, it would be unreasonable and inappropriate for this to be delayed. In order for you to use DNA that day, you have to produce it by June 13th. If you do not, it is to be excluded. In intermediate intervening period before June 13th, defense counsel fairly put the state on notice that they specifically wanted the statistical analysis in order to of the DNA in order to proceed. The state never responded to that request and never raised any of these scientific arguments, which it tries to now use as the basis of the delay, never raised that to defend against the discovery violation.
When did you get the DNA result?
We had the DNA report in late.
Judge Carpenter says June 2nd, 2006.
Yes, we had the DNA report, which said that no statistical analysis was done. It was at that time that defense counsel filed a follow-up discovery request asking specifically for the statistical analysis and for some other things. They got further discovery in response to that, but they never got the statistical analysis. The state never responded saying either it doesn't exist or we don't have to give it to you. 3515 does not apply in this case, therefore we don't have to give it to you. So they never responded. Thus, there's a...
So wait a second. So on July 13th, which was supposed to be the new trial date...
Correct.
You had gotten the DNA report in a timely fashion...
Correct.
But you had not gotten the statistical analysis.
Correct.
And as a result of that, what was the court... Did the court rule that the DNA was out or what?
No. What happened was there was... Well... Technically, yes, there was a standing order out there that said it's automatically out. So technically, it should have automatically been out. But on this day, what happened was, on July 13th, was because defense counsel also filed a relevancy motion, which could have been made in trial, the state said, oh, we were sandbagged with this whole Nelson 3515 issue, which, in fact, was their burden to raise as to why they didn't have to produce this.
Well, did the report state that the statistical analysis was not relevant because there is a mixed source of biologically related persons?
No, it did not. It said it was not done because they were related. And then when the prosecutor came into trial on July 13th, he said it's because there's a mixed DNA sample and we can't have this excluded every time or we won't be able to proceed on the rape offenses. And that is not what the ME said. There was no good faith scientific belief. No one had spoken to the medical examiner about this issue until after this continuance, which is the first time the state asked for the statistics, and within 13 days had it produced to defense counsel. What the situation was for the prosecutor the day he got the continuance was this. He had gotten the case the afternoon before. He had not spoken to the medical examiner. He had a victim downstairs that didn't want to testify. And at that time, Carmen Dabney wasn't around. So he would not have been able to proceed. So he and the court agreed that a Daubert hearing would be necessary when there were no scientific issues on the table. The only thing that was on the table was a simple probative prejudicial balancing test and the Nelson issue, which, first of all, could have been raised during trial, and secondly, should have been the state's, would be the only good faith defense response the state could have given in response to the discovery.
So if I understand you, what you're saying is that on July 13th, your client would have had a better chance of getting off if they had gone to trial because on July 13th, the DNA evidence wouldn't have gotten in.
On July 13th, he would not have been convicted of the rape because the state represented it on the record. They would not have been able to proceed on the rape without the DNA.
Okay, so the prejudice is because the state wasn't ready. Your client could have gotten off on one of the charges. Is that the kind of prejudice that is recognized in terms of speedy trial?
Well, I think what happens, first of all, not every single prong, including prejudice, has to be established to show a speedy trial if the other factors are sufficient. And here, I would suggest that the reasons for the delay is what is significant here in deciding that there was a speedy trial. I would suggest that the facts suggest that this continuance was used to obtain an advantage to get this conviction. And that can be seen by the fact that the state represented to the court that there's this mixed DNA issue, which was not the issue, and that there's this good faith scientific belief, when they never spoke to the medical examiner before the state about the statistics. They never did. The medical examiner, contrary to the court's order, never opined that it was inapplicable. He never said it couldn't be done. And, in fact, in the state's written response later, she says, yes, they are routinely done. Mixed samples are routinely done.
Okay, well, let me put it this way. What if on July 13th the state came to the court and said, Your Honor, we are not ready for trial. We have no prosecutor who knows what's going on. We haven't spoken to the witnesses. We're just not prepared. We want a continuance. If the court had granted that continuance, you would have an argument as to how much time has elapsed. But how would that be an argument that your defense was impaired by the continuance?
Because, excuse me, because the state used that continuance to get the advantage. I guess that's the reason, I think, is more significant than the prejudice in this case.
But wait a second. Wouldn't it always be the case if the state comes in and says, Your Honor, we're not ready to go to trial today? The defendant is sitting there saying, well, then I've got a pretty good chance if we do go to trial today because the prosecutor said they're not ready.
No, this is different. There was an order that said discovery by this date or it's excluded. This date is a firm date because it would be unacceptable and inappropriate to continue it past July 13th. That's what the court said. It was a firm date. He said, if you're going to be in another trial, get someone to cover it. All that had been communicated to the state. Also communicated to the state was a specific request, not just a general request, but a specific request asking for the statistical analysis. The state did not respond to that. Instead, on the day of trial, represented that there's this scientific issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, let me make sure I understand a phrase that Judge Carpenter used that at least superficially answers the question you raise about whether the state, quote, did not respond to that, meaning the failure to perform the statistical analysis.
Correct.
The order that required the state to produce the DNA report by June 13th and that said that if it wasn't, it would be excluded, was complied with in part when the state provided the DNA report on June 2nd. What was missing from that report was the statistical analysis that you believe the statute required.
Correct.
Judge Carpenter says the report indicated that the reason it wasn't done was because of the relationship between the father and daughter. That's part of the report that was timely filed. He says there's then an issue on whether the statute really is applicable in requiring the statistical analysis under these circumstances. He doesn't focus on whether the state failed to comply with the original discovery order.
Correct.
Because he concludes that they did, that this confusion, it was a result of different possible interpretations of the statute. Now, why is that wrong?
It's wrong because, first of all, yes, the DNA report did say it wasn't done because of relatedness. Didn't say it couldn't be done, wasn't necessary. It was after that report that the defense asked for that. And instead of them going to the ME saying, can it be done, is it possible, and then sending a response saying it can't be done or producing it, they ignored it. So I would argue that if we had not done this follow-up discovery request, then maybe the court would be correct. Now, with respect to this issue of whether we were entitled to it or not, again, if they were not going to give it to us, they should have said why they weren't going to give it to us. And quite frankly,
Well, why isn't the report of June 2nd telling you that they aren't going to do it and why? They say the statistical analysis was not done, and he says due to, but I guess he means because of, the relationship between the father and daughter.
He's just saying they don't routinely do it because of that. It doesn't say, and nowhere in there, and nowhere in any place, in any of the state's documents or the medical examiner's documents, does it say it cannot be done. In fact, the state in its response acknowledges that mixed DNA samples are often done and routinely done.
Yeah, but that's a dispute over whether the response to discovery was adequate or not, not whether it was timely or not. And you did, or the defense did, what it was supposed to do. It, in effect, by filing a motion in limine, asked for an amplification of that, either exclude it because it didn't comply or explain why.
Correct.
And then the state, as I understand it, responded to that by saying, well, we'll have a Daubert hearing because we want to show why it wouldn't be applicable at all in this case. And that would explain why it wasn't done.
No.
Is that illogical?
It's illogical that we had to tell the state that their evidence was inadmissible or that we had to tell them, explain to us why. When we asked for the DNA specifically, they never responded. They had plenty of time to say, go to the medical examiner and say, why did you say this? And then tell us. They don't routinely do it. And then we could decide, we'll do it in this case. Nelson is very clear. Any type of DNA match requires statistical analysis.
Well, Judge Carpenter doesn't seem to believe that Nelson is very clear because he refers to it as an uncertain environment that would require the statistical analysis under the circumstances.
And that's not true. What's true is that in Nelson, the court dealt specifically with the restricted fragment length polymorphism test. In our case, it was short tandem repeat polymerase chain reaction. So the state is saying the statute, 3515, says we only have to give you the discovery when it's RFLP, not when it's STR-PCR. When Nelson was never overruled, and before that said any time, any DNA match, doesn't limit it to RFLP, any time there's any DNA match, it's not admissible unless there's statistical analysis. It wouldn't be admissible for the reasons that our defense counsel raised the day of trial, but it's also not admissible because he was never given that in discovery.
But we do agree, don't we, that as far as the report ordered by June 13th, there was a report filed on June 2nd. The argument is it was incomplete in your view.
Yeah, because...
Not that the discovery order wasn't responded to by the state.
Well, it said any DNA evidence that was going to be used at trial. And by the way, they used the statistics at trial.
Yeah, and then... they ultimately produced the statistical analysis.
Right, after they were told to produce it by June 13th. And they had even another month from June 13th to July 13th.
You want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, thank you.
May it please the Court, James Wakely on behalf of the State of Delaware. Between September 1st and November 16th, 2005, Cheyenne Dabney took three pictures of his 12-year-old daughter in sexual positions, one of which she was using a vibrator on herself. Dabney's girlfriend, Maribel Pagan, discovered a bag full of sex toys, including a vibrator and the three photos sometime later, called police. Dabney was arrested on November 21st of 05 and eventually did go to trial about a year later, slightly more than a year.
Was he incarcerated in the meantime?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. I do not believe he was ever released on bail. The speedy trial test has four factors: the length of the delay, the reason for the delay, the assertion for the right, and the prejudice asserted.
Now, what are the speedy trial guidelines that the judicial branch has articulated to the trial court?
It's typically the length of the delay must be prejudicial, presumptively prejudicial, before it moves on to the next few steps.
Now, my question is, aren't there best practices standards that apply called speedy trial guidelines?
All I'm aware of, Your Honor, and I apologize, is Administrative Directive 88, which I believe calls for all cases to go to trial before the end of 1 year. I'm unaware if there's any others, and I apologize for that. The circumstances here clearly indicate that Mr. Dabney cannot make out two, possibly three, of the four factors of the Middlebrook analysis. First, he never asserted his speedy trial right. The first mention of right to a speedy trial came in a response to his initial motion in limine, which was filed more than a month after they received the initial DNA report. And it was not the basis for the motion in limine. Rather, the court's prior order was the basis for the motion in limine. This response to a response was filed 10 months after Mr. Dabney had been arrested.
Well, that obviously didn't impress the trial judge. I mean, the trial judge did make a ruling on the speedy trial claim. That is, he entertained the claim.
He entertained the claim, Your Honor. I don't believe he specifically addressed it on that basis. I believe his concern primarily was more with the alleged discovery violation. And there was no discovery violation here. The state provided the DNA test earlier than it was required to under the second trial schedule, I believe it was.
Well, that presumes, of course, that the report filed complied with the statute, and that presumes that the statute did not require statistical analysis.
That would be the state's
argument. Because the report didn't include one.
Yes, Your Honor. 3515 is very clear. It only covers the RFLP test. There's no mention of any other type of test. It only requires it for the RFLP test. And in this case, the statistical analysis was irrelevant, unnecessary, because there was no question of identity here. The primary issue in Nelson was identity, whether this person was the person who did this crime. Here, there was never any question that Mr. Dabney was the one who committed the crime. He confessed on two occasions to having committed the crime. He first wrote a letter to his girlfriend, Maribel Pagan.
Well, that sounds like an argument that the DNA analysis wasn't required in the first place.
It may not have been.
Well, why did the state base its request for continuance initially on the inability to produce the DNA results?
Well, that was part of the request, Your Honor. I believe in an overabundance of caution, the state sought to have the DNA tests completed, as well as the prosecutor who was assigned to the case was also.
So we have here a delay well in excess of the speedy trial guidelines caused by the state's desire to have DNA tests available when the DNA test wasn't necessary. How do we balance that against an incarcerated defendant over a period of a year waiting for trial?
Well, Your Honor, first, the state was unaware at the time what Mr. Dabney's defense would be at trial. We later found out, and my learned colleague here apparently makes a big deal out of the fact that we didn't know that Mr. Dabney's ex-wife was going to say that he told her that he had done this. We found out that on the day of trial as well as the defense did.
Which day of trial?
The final day of trial, or the first day of the eventual actual trial date, November 28th of 2007. That was the day that we found out. What the reason for that is, I can't speculate. But that was the day that we found out that she had been told by Mr. Dabney that he had committed the crime. The fact is that Mr. Dabney has not established any prejudice within
You said November 2007. Did you mean November 2006?
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize.
I'm confused here. In July, you had a firm trial date.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the state shows up and says, we can't go to trial today, right?
Well, no. What happened was the day before, after the close of business, the defense filed a motion in limine based on their perceived error in the discovery proffer. And we said we could not address that issue that day. But we were prepared to go to trial. If the court wished to have an additional hearing on the DNA evidence, they could sever that part of the case out, but the state was prepared to go to trial on all charges as of that day. And I believe that's in the record as well.
So what opposing counsel just told us was not accurate, because we were told that the state said, without the DNA, we can't go to trial on the rape charge today.
That's accurate. The state said if the DNA evidence were excluded, the state would not be prepared to go forward on the rape charge, because part of the basis of the rape charge was the penetration, of which the DNA was an element.
But a minute ago you said that, you know, he had confessed twice the DNA was not necessary to your case.
It was not necessary to the remainder, to the other parts of the case.
But the only thing at issue here is the rape charge.
I believe they're asserting, or Mr. Dabney's asserting a speedy trial claim as to the entirety of the the state's or of his convictions. It was the defense had the initial response to the discovery. They had the medical examiner's first report for over a month before they filed their motion in limine to exclude the evidence. And the day of trial, this was an issue that was out before the court, and the prosecutor there was not prepared to address it at that particular moment.
So you're saying the delay was created by the defense?
At least some portion of it, Your Honor. They had the report in evidence, and they had the report as a result of the state's discovery response, and waited a month, either through neglect or through intentional act, to file their motion in limine on the eve of trial to exclude the defense.
Is that
evidence
critical to your legal position?
No, Your Honor, because the state would assert that a year is not, first, presumptively prejudicial, and second, that there can be no prejudice from this case because identity was not an issue, and Mr. Dabney has not asserted what other prejudice he suffered as a result of this supposed speedy trial violation.
Do you have the date that Mr. Dabney was arrested and incarcerated?
He was arrested on November 21st of 2005. I would assume that that would have led to immediate incarceration. I don't.
Two months later, he was indicted. As I understand the record, in the context of your continued reference to no presumption of improper delay, he was incarcerated from November until June 8th, which was the first trial date. And after 7 months, the state says they can't go to trial on the scheduled trial date because the DNA analysis had not been completed and the prosecutor was in another trial.
First, two points, Your Honor. First, there appears from the record to be some period of time that he spent being psychiatrically evaluated after his arrest. I don't know whether he spent the entire period of time in the Howard R. Young Center or if he spent some time at the
Mitch Moment. Well, my only point is this. He was arrested and probable cause existed to present to the grand jury, and he was arrested in November, indicted in January. It still took from January until June to get him his first trial date.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the state had 7 months from arrest to prepare for trial, and on the day for trial, the state says they can't go forward because the prosecutor's not available, because the prosecutor was in another trial, and the DNA analysis had not been completed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, it seems to me the trial judge who granted the continuance had in mind the fact that the defendant had already been incarcerated for 7 months without trial, granted the continuance, but said that if the continuance is in part based upon a DNA analysis, I'm ordering you to file a DNA report by June 13th, 2006, which was roughly a week later, and that if it's not provided by that date, the DNA information will be excluded at trial. It seems to me that the trial judge must have had in mind the fact that the defendant had already been in jail for 7 months. The state hadn't prepared for trial in over 7 months, so that's why that order was entered.
I would agree, Your Honor, that it does, from a cold reading of it, appear to be that case. I can't speak for the trial judge on that particular issue.
Well, I can't think of any other rational basis for that conclusion. Can you?
No, Your Honor. The fact is, however, that he never asserted his right to go to trial based on that speedy trial claim. He never asserted that right specifically.
No, I understand that.
And
But the speedy trial guidelines aren't based upon someone asserting the right. They're based upon all the parties, the court, the prosecutor, and the defense being prepared for trial within a reasonable period of time, and they're focused on the cost to the state of incarcerating somebody without trial and the inherent prejudice to a defendant of being incarcerated without having the opportunity to set bail based on their financial conditions for a reasonable period of time. And 7 months is clearly in excess of the speedy trial guidelines, whether a right to speedy trial is formally asserted or not.
Yes, Your Honor. However,
I don't see anything in the record that suggests an advantage to the defendant of staying in jail longer while the state prepares for trial. Do you?
No, Your Honor. However, the speedy trial claim does not rest on advantage to the state, but rather disadvantage to the defendant, and the defendant here cannot assert any disadvantage. And
well, look, there's a difference between waiting for trial while you're out on bail and waiting for trial while you're incarcerated. I've yet, in 37 years, to read a speedy trial opinion from any court anywhere that doesn't focus on the prejudice of being incarcerated while awaiting trial.
However, and I would agree with you, Your Honor, however, given the claims laid out in Middlebrook, I believe it's instructive that Mr. Dabney doesn't even assert that he was prejudiced by remaining in court.
Mr. Wakely, as I understand it, you have a two-pronged argument. The first is there's no, the year delay was not presumptively prejudicial.
Yes, Your Honor.
And secondly, there was no actual prejudice shown here.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the speedy trial proceeding that led to the opinion that's being appealed from, did the state argue that a year was not presumptively prejudicial?
No, Your Honor, because the speedy trial claim was never specifically raised.
How could it have not been specifically raised if that was the basis for the opinion of the Superior Court?
The first time the speedy trial claim was brought up by the defense was in the response to the state's response to the defense motion in limine. In almost a passing fashion, in one paragraph of the response to a response.
So Judge Carpenter's opinion, which speaks clearly of there not being a speedy trial violation, addressed a point that was never fairly raised?
That would be the state's position, Your Honor. And if the court has no further questions, the state will rest on its brief.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
With respect to the assertion at A37 in the defendant's motion in limine, the defense counsel notes that the first continuance was objected to by the defendant. So as early as May, the defendant is objecting to continuances. The record doesn't have a specific thing indicating what language is used, whether the term speedy trial was actually used or not is not clear, but I think objecting to a continuance is 6 months out from the end trial date is sufficient. The other important thing here is that the state says that we were either negligent or intentionally waited till the night before trial to argue that we should have received the statistics. That can't be any further from the truth. We received the report on June 2nd. 10 days later, June 12th, we asked for the specific discovery. We didn't then move on the 13th as we could have. No motion was necessary because there was the court order. It would have been excluded on June 13th. They then had another month to respond. So we did not wait till the night before to sandbag them on the specific discovery issue here. 10 days after we got the report, we read the report, we made a specific discovery request. The length in this case is presumptively prejudicial because, A, it was a simple case. It took 1 day for trial. And the defendant was conceding all but the rape charge. And even in Barker versus Wingo, the court notes that even a 60-day delay can be presumptively prejudicial depending on the case.
All right, now I'm confused. The defendant's conceding all but the rape charge. Is it correct then that the only charge in issue before us is the rape charge?
Well, Your Honor, every case that counsel's come across is that the correct remedy is dismissal of the indictment. However, it does appear the only prejudice in this case was to the rape offense. Therefore, if the court were to dismiss the rape offense, that would cure the prejudice in this case. Additionally, this state in Delaware has admitted in Mills versus State that 1 year and 3 months was enough to trigger the Barker analysis, and in Skinner versus State that 1 year was sufficient to trigger the analysis. Finally, with respect to the psychiatric evaluation, there is in the docket a bail condition of mental health evaluation, which is done routinely. This was not a psychiatric evaluation for him to go to DPC. It was mental health evaluation and treatment while he was in jail.
Tell me again, or tell us again, What is your response to the state's argument that the speedy trial issue was not fairly raised in the proceeding that led to the opinion of Judge Carpenter?
Well,
in effect, the judge sandbagged the state.
Yeah, right. At A30, I'm over my time. Did you want me to continue?
Yeah, please answer.
At A37 in this defendant's motion limine, he notes that he had objected to the May 17th continuance. That was never disputed by the state that he objected. In response to that continuance request and that objection, the court notes after July 13th it would be inappropriate to go any further, indicating this continuance was based on objection to continuance was speedy trial. There's nothing in the record, I concede, that says that that date he used the word speedy trial. He objected to a continuance 7 months after he was arrested. He objected to the continuance on July 13th. He objected to the continuance in his response to the motion in limine.
So in substance, the objection was speedy trial, even though the words themselves were not used. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. And I don't know exactly what words were used in the first objection, but the court apparently took it that way.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Take the case under advisement and recess.
Aye.